Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Estoy casi segura de que conoces la gama Almendra de L'Occitane, muy famosa y reconocible por su perfume de almendras frescas y que ahora cumple 20 años. Su producto estrella es el aceite de ducha Almendra, cuya fórmula, concebida para preservar la barrera hidrolipídica de la piel, funciona como un velo cremoso cuando te lo aplicas, dejando la piel limpia, hidratada y reconfortada. Lo aman todas las pieles, incluso las más secas. Y lo demuestra el hecho de que quien lo prueba suele repetir. Yo personalmente creo que su aroma es adictivo. La almendra es uno de los ingredientes emblemáticos de L'Occitane, que lleva trabajando en la Provenza francesa, colaborando con pequeños agricultores locales para recuperar este cultivo que se estaba perdiendo en la zona. De las almendras la marca lo aprovecha todo, hasta la cáscara. Una iniciativa de L'Occitane que os va a encantar es la posibilidad de rellenar los envases en las fuentes de recarga que ya tienen instaladas en tiendas seleccionadas de Madrid, Barcelona, Zaragoza y Valencia. Allí encontrarás varios productos disponibles para la recarga, entre ellos el aceite de ducha almendra. Gracias a L'Occitane por esta iniciativa para reducir el consumo de plástico de un solo uso y por ayudar a que podamos seguir ofreciendo buenos contenidos.
Hello, I'm Cristina Mitre, journalist and author of the Beauty Mail blog. Welcome to my podcast, where every week I will chat with top experts in health and wellness so we can learn together how to thrive and enjoy a better life. She started out in cosmetics because her skin was oily. She suffered from acne. And she immediately realized that the products she was sold not only did not help, but also worsened her problem. She worked as a shop assistant in the 70s and was fired for refusing to sell Miracle Spot tightening products. She studied, specialized, and became a beauty journalist. This was the start of her revolution. In 1993, she began formulating, and in 1995, launched her own cosmetic brand, Paula's Choice, with honesty and scientific evidence as the hallmark of each of her products. Today, almost 70 years old, Paula Begun is one of the outstanding names in the world of beauty. If you're using retinol or niacinamide, it is almost certainly thanks to her. If I say alpha-hydroxyacid, and you know what that is without having studied chemistry, it is due to her. She changed everything.
I've spent my career trying, you know, helping to educate women around that, and men for that matter, but men just don't care as much as women do. There's some basics. I think that probably at the head of the list is that whatever you do for skincare, if you're not using a sunscreen rated SPF 30 or greater 365 days a year and the bad rays of the sun come through windows, then you're doing nothing. It's kind of like smoking a cigarette and thinking, well, if I eat a healthy diet, I won't get emphysema or destroy my lungs. Just doesn't work that way. Your skincare can never keep up with the damage you're causing from unprotected sun exposure. Skincare products cannot repair that kind of constant damage from unprotected sun exposure. The other thing is to never do anything that irritates the skin. So the all of the research around skincare health, anti-aging, anti-skin disorders, acne, rosacea, eczema, is all about anti-inflammatory. Anything you do that inflames the skin, ages it, causes collagen to break down, destroys the barrier, hurts any, it actually damages DNA, damages the actual DNA structure of skin. And everything that irritates the skin ranges from, well, obviously sun damage, pollution, hot water, cold water. There's this whole myth on the internet these days about icing skin.
Today, with Paula Begun, we are going to talk about cosmetic ingredients, scientific evidence, honest expectations, and misleading claims. And of course, Paula is going to give us a bunch of tips to improve our skincare routines. Hello, Paula Begun. Welcome to my podcast.
Hello. I'm glad to be here with your podcast.
It's such a pleasure to have you. So thank you for taking the time.
My pleasure.
It's a great honor to have you in my podcast. So Paula, let's go back to the past. You started your cosmetics career back in 1977. Could we travel back in time with you? That's my
I'm
age.
I'm so old. Yeah, 70. Is that when you were born? Or 1980 something? Yeah, 77 is when I, I started as a makeup artist, really. How old was I? I guess it was 1974, 75. It's how I sent myself through school, through university. I was pretty good at makeup. That was just a skill set I had. I had acne, very bad acne as a girl, as a teenager, and you know, nothing worked. No, you know, nothing I used ever helped my skin. And, you know, thankfully, my parents let me wear makeup. So for some reason, I just was able to reproduce any makeup design I saw in a fashion magazine. So I got work doing makeup. You know, I mean, I got work in department stores, but I always would get fired from department stores because the salesperson would say, you know, sell this product saying it closed pores. And I would say, if it closed pores, who would have open pores? Somebody, you know, sell this product saying it gets rid of wrinkles. And I would say, well, then why do you have wrinkles? That didn't fly. I mean, that I was gone very fast. And so I stayed being a makeup artist for a long time. And then I went on to, I was a reporter. I had, you know, that kind of time in my life as a reporter and in Seattle. I moved to the Seattle area. And then I went on to write about the cosmetics industry, all my frustration with the cosmetics industry and what I had learned from researching the industry. And I actually didn't think I would stay in the cosmetics industry. It didn't occur to me that that was the career path I would take. But every time I turned around, something else crazy was going on in the cosmetics industry. And it just became a passion. So I started writing my books, and first one was published in 1984. Went on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Well, I went on the Oprah Winfrey Show many times, but the first time sold a whole lot of books. And then I think I wrote about seven more books, and I thought I didn't want to write any more books because it was hell writing books. I mean, the last book I wrote before I started my own skincare line was 700 pages, and I wrote that all by myself. And so in 1993, I started formulating products for Paula's Choice Skincare and launched on the internet in 1995.
Because actually, your background is in science. You study science.
I studied science. Actually, not cosmetic science. I was actually majoring in neurology and biology. But anytime I was at the library, I was in the dermatology section. I was in the chemistry section. I was just too focused because I didn't graduate in neurology because I couldn't stay focused on neurology. I had a passion for anything to do with skin. I just, it started out where I just wanted to solve my own skincare problems. And then it just became, I didn't want anyone else to go through what I went through, struggling with skincare, struggling with products that didn't do what they say, products that not only didn't do what they say, made my skin worse. And and then it just took over. Yeah, it just took over my life. It still takes over. I mean, I should be retired by now. I'm going to be 70 next year and I'm still not retired. So I don't know that that'll ever happen.
Oh, people can see it, but you've got an amazing skin. I'm seeing you through Zoom and I can't believe you're turning 70. I mean, your skin is just, it glows through the screen.
wouldn't it be terrible if you were talking to a skincare, you know, person and they had terrible, I mean, you know, really, I mean, it would not be good.
That's sweet of you to say. You've got amazing skin. So,
Thank you. Back in 1977,
the FDA, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, finalized the Fair Packaging and Labeling Act. So, from then on, it was a mandatory requirement.
Changed my career.
Yeah, it was a mandatory requirement for all cosmetics to include a complete list of ingredients printed on the product packaging and presented in the sending order or content. However, 45 years have passed, Paula, and consumers are still very confused. And I guess
they're not going to get unconfused. First of all, just to be clear, when the United States changed that labeling law, the next country to change it wasn't until the 90s when Australia changed it. The EU didn't change it, I think, until the late 2000s, like 2009 or 2000. I mean, not late 2000s, but in the, you know, 2000 something. I can't exactly remember the dates. So when I was doing my research, so I'm doing my research and looking at formularies and ingredients, and it was, you know, there is no other way to critique a cosmetics performance other than what it contains. And so I could look at a product in the United States, go up to Canada and see what they had available because I had a readership in Canada and the ingredients wouldn't be there. I mean, there was obviously something the cosmetics industry did not want us to know. Now, you know, in 2022, almost every country has a mandatory ingredient labeling law. Unfortunately, it makes my life easier and it makes my work easier, but understanding an ingredient label, it's chemistry. Those ingredient names, I mean, there's thousands of ingredients. They do many different things in many different combinations. And trying to understand that isn't easy. It's very complicated. Skincare is very complicated. Skin physiology, how skin works, is very complicated. And the myths that are out there just make it worse. So I don't know that a consumer can ever be savvy. I mean, what a lot of information on the internet tends to focus on is an ingredient safe. And often that information is just so based on, you know, 100% usage on animal studies and, you know, it's just not real life if it's even the way that study actually concluded. Often I see people quoting studies and it isn't how the study concluded, which makes it even more confusing. But the whole way of understanding how an ingredient works or doesn't work is a separate issue from what is or isn't safe. Because just knowing, well, this works, this, you know, this is safe, this isn't safe, still doesn't tell you, okay, what does it do? Does it really help with acne? Does it really help with wrinkles? Does it really help pollution damage? Does it really hydrate the skin? What does it do? And is it effective doing that? So it's so complicated. I mean, you know, I've been doing it for 42 years and I'm still researching. I mean, I research, that's what I do almost every day, is I spend some amount of time looking at studies about skin physiology, cosmetic ingredients, what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, but the thing is that like the big trend now for many brands is selling ingredients like hyaluronic acid, retinol, vitamin C, whatever. And you just said that just knowing ingredients isn't enough. And the problem is that the consumer is completely lost, because it's like if you need a background in cosmetic science or cosmetic formulation just to be able to buy a moisturizer. So it's tough. It's not only safety.
It's tough. I'm not going to disagree with you. It's tough. I think that, so first, hyaluronic acid is a great ingredient. Retinol is a great ingredient. Vitamin C is a great ingredient. But just to be clear, when it comes to great ingredients, there are a lot of great ingredients. We tend to get hyper-focused on one ingredient, and that's the ingredient we have to have, or a new trend. Like, you know, I always get asked, well, what's coming? What's the next trend? What's the latest and greatest? And I go, I don't know. The research hasn't, I don't have the science, you know, crystal ball. The science hasn't been done yet. When the science is, you know, a lot of cosmetic companies will tell you the science has been done, but one study does not make a conclusion. So I know what a lot of people will tell you is the latest and greatest and up and coming, but it doesn't mean that that's actually what's happening. I'm looking for what is already proven. I don't want somebody to be a guinea pig for the cosmetics industry. I can think of a ton of ingredients that have come and gone that were supposed to be the latest and greatest. And they're long gone. They're sitting on your shelf, you know, and you're hoping maybe, you know, somebody'll inherit them for you, because they're useless. They don't do anything.
Give us an example, because that's what they're going to be thinking. Okay, which ingredient was that?
Well, don't you remember, like, there was, you know, snail creams? Do you remember snail creams? Stem cell? Do you remember stem cell creams? Stem cells, that was just stupid. That was apple stem cells. You know, stem cells by their very nature are not identified cells. They can become anything. They're baby ready to become something cells. But in order to do that, they have to be alive. And you know, in a skincare product, they're dead. And apple stem cells, their job is to become apples. I mean, it's just, or some part of an apple. I mean, it never made sense. And slugs, you were supposed to, I mean, something about, I guess maybe because they go so slow, then your aging would go slow. I don't know. There was cactus extract for a while. Cactuses, you know, hold water. So because cactuses can hold on to water, an extract would help your skin hold on to water. That never happened. And forget the science why that's not possible, but that wasn't possible. Oh, what was the, oh, aloe. Aloe was a thing for many years, aloe vera in skincare products. Aloe vera is
huge,
a weak, kind of do-nothing ingredient. It has very little, it's mostly water with a little bit of amino acids, not very stable, kind of useless, not a terrible ingredient, just a do-nothing. You know, if you're going to put something on your skin, you want it to be a powerhouse. You know, at Paula's Choice, we call it a superhero ingredient. It's no superhero ingredient. Oh, I mean, I could go on and on. I've been in the industry for 42 years. Oh, collagen. That's another one. Collagen as a skincare ingredient. The notion was that when collagen injections became popular in the, what was that, like the 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
So they started putting collagen in creams. So you were supposed to believe, well, it would help your collagen grow more collagen if you stuck collagen in your skin from a cosmetic. It wasn't possible, physiologically wasn't possible. Collagen actually isn't even a good hydrating ingredient. It's a do nothing. And that's why you don't see it in skincare products anymore. Mm-hmm. There's brilliant ways to produce more collagen, but collagen in skincare products is pretty useless.
Mm. How do we know if a product is badly formulated?
I've spent my career trying, you know, helping to educate women around that, and men for that matter, but men just don't care as much as women do. You know, there's some basics. I think that probably at the head of the list is that whatever you do for skincare, if you're not using a sunscreen rated SPF 30 or greater, 365 days a year, and the bad rays of the sun come through windows, then you're doing nothing. It's kind of like smoking a cigarette and thinking, well, if I eat a healthy diet, I won't get emphysema or destroy my lungs. Just doesn't work that way. Your skincare can never keep up with the damage you're causing from unprotected sun exposure. Skincare products cannot repair that kind of constant damage from unprotected sun exposure. The other thing is to never do anything that irritates the skin. So the all of the research around skincare health, anti-aging, anti-skin disorders, acne, rosacea, eczema, is all about anti-inflammatory. Anything you do that inflames the skin, ages it, causes collagen to break down, destroys the barrier, hurts any, it actually damages DNA, damages the actual DNA structure of skin. And everything that irritates the skin ranges from, well, obviously sun damage, pollution, hot water, cold water. There's this whole myth on the internet these days about icing skin.
That's big. That's a big one.
There's such crazy stuff on the internet. That skincare products that contain alcohol, essential oils are unessential oils. They're actually irritants, all of them. Any oil that radiates fragrant is an unessential oil. It causes inflammation and irritation, and that's damaging to skin. Abrasive scrubs, harsh scrubs, dermaplaning, anything that scrapes and irritates the skin. Anything that inflames the skin is a problem. Red is not a good color. Red is a damaged color. Tan is a damaged color that doesn't help skin, that hurts skin. So that probably is first and foremost some of the most basic things you can do to have and start having the best skin possible.
Mm-hmm. Which are then the critical type of ingredients that all skin types need?
So other than sunscreen, that's kind of at the top of the list, and all of those don'ts, the most important group of ingredients are antioxidants. And there's dozens of brilliant antioxidants. Antioxidants are the major way for that skincare products can protect skin from pollution damage. Obviously sunscreen doesn't protect from pollution, but antioxidants do. Your products need to be loaded with antioxidants. Again, there's everything from green tea to vitamin C to, the list goes on and on. I mean, right now I'm blanking out because I always blank out when I'm in the middle of an interview. I should have my antioxidant list in front of me, but I don't. But there's brilliant ones, lots of brilliant ones. And then next would be the skin replenishing ingredients. We call them skin replenishing ingredients at Paula's Choice. And what we mean by that is because of sun damage and pollution damage, your skin can't make for itself what it used to before we had sun damage and pollution damage when we were young. So those substances that help skin retain water and help skin's layers of skin be healthy, ingredients like hyaluronic acid, ceramides, omega fatty acids, those ingredients, we also refer to them as smart hydrating ingredients. So we often think of hydration as being from the top down. And hydration in skin is actually from the bottom up. So the lower layers of skin are about 70% water. And then as the life of a skin cell goes from the lower layers up to the top, and then when they get to the top, they're supposed to, if skin was healthy, they would jump off. They don't, but we'll get to exfoliation in a second. And so what these smart hydrating ingredients do, and this includes glycerin, which is like one of the old standard basic hydrating ingredients, is help move water to where it needs to go in the layers of skin through the life of a skin cell. They're really kind of ingenious. They're stunning. Now, when skin is young, it does it on its own. But then again, because there's things we can't make anymore because of sun damage and pollution damage mostly, that you need to give skin what it can't make for itself anymore. Included in that is something we call skin repairing ingredients. Skin repairing ingredients are ingredients like retinol and niacinamide and peptides. Now, retinol and niacinamide are very specific ingredients. Retinol is the entire vitamin A molecule, and niacinamide is part of the vitamin B molecule. They are cell communicating ingredients, meaning you take a living skin cell, there's little receptor sites, little places on the cell that retinol and niacinamide can go to and actually tell a living skin cell to make younger skin cells. Now, doesn't quite work as perfectly as I'm saying it, but to some extent, to one degree or another, that is what they do. And they're remarkable in that manner. Peptides are pathway communicating ingredients, meaning that the whole human body, well, same thing with cells in general, but in skin, let's say there's a pathway, well, there is a pathway that makes, because of sun damage, makes unhealthy melanin production, brown spots, yellow skin tone. So the pathway that sun damage creates to make unhealthy skin color, abnormal skin color, there are peptides that absorb into skin and can tell that pathway, stop. Wait, I don't want you to make unhealthy skin color. Turn around, go back, cut it out. And then there are other peptides that can tell the pathways that have been broken to make healthy melanin to say, wait, start again. We're unblocking, we're making a clear path for you to start making better melanin. Now, again, it doesn't quite work as perfectly as I'm saying it, but it works to some extent, and it's incredible. And those are the ingredients we call skin repairing ingredients. So those are the three categories everybody needs. Those are the basics, separate from having, acne or rosacea or eczema or advanced signs of sun damage. But then the last one is exfoliation. Hmm. So we often think of exfoliation as scrubbing the skin. And scrubbing the skin, especially with abrasive scrubs or, scrub brushes, whatever, rip at the skin and actually cause inflammation. They're bad for skin. They cause micro tears, hurt the skin's ability to heal, cause collagen to break down. The absolute, no question about it, hands down best exfoliants are gentle leave-on liquid exfoliants like AHAs. Well, AHAs and BHAs are the primary ones. AHAs is usually glycolic and lactic acid. We know the most about those. That's the most research has been done. And BHA is salicylic acid. It's just one ingredient. And those, when they're contain no irritating ingredients, no alcohol, no essential oils, none of that crap, and they're gentle, those AHAs and BHA exfoliate skin as young skin did without irritation. They restore hydration. They repair the barrier of skin. They improve skin discolorations, particularly for BHA, unclog pores, and reduce breakouts.
And they are key in your brand.
I do have a thing about AHAs and BHAs. That's true. There's no question about it. I've been making AHAs and BHAs since 1994.
And they're amazing, yeah.
But the research about BHAs and AHAs, I mean, everything we do is about the research. It's got to be published research or we don't do it. So everything about AHAs and BHAs, we've known, excuse me, since, oh, geez, 1970s, I think. I mean, it's just been the research about AHAs and BHAs have been around for decades, especially AHAs, but BHA as well. It's just been around forever. And the gold standard for hydration for the longest time was lactic acid. You can't say that about scrubs. And then we found out as you use higher concentrations, you know, really not much over 8 or 10%, depends how much sun damage you have. You not only improve hydration and repair the skin's barrier, but you exfoliate off the built-up dead layers of skin, making it smooth again. It's, yeah, yeah, we have a ton of... So the thing about... people say, why the hell do you have so many AHAs and BHAs? I do have a lot of products. The issue is that when a particular type of product is important, like a product loaded with antioxidants, sunscreen, what we've been talking about, when those ingredients are so vital to skin, the question is, what texture of product do you use? Mm. So when you have my skin type, I have incredibly oily skin. I've had oily skin forever. I have clogged pores. I have blemishes. I'm old. I struggle. You know, I'm fighting wrinkles and sagging skin, all that kind of stuff. The idea is that I'm not going to put anything on my skin that comes in a cream or a lotion or a thick texture because it's just going to make me oilier and greasier. I'm not going to do that. So everything I use, those important ingredients are all in liquid, very feather light, very, yeah, thin, light, nothing pore clogging. And then if you have drier skin, then you can do the creams and the lotions, you know, especially if you don't have clogged pores. I mean, around my eyes, my eye area is dry, but then I use a creamy moisturizer around my eyes. But on the rest of my face, I would be an oil slick.
Yeah. Layering products is very important as well. And you talk about it in your books.
Right. So the issue is that it's almost impossible to get, well, you can't get everything in one product. That's especially when you look at the need for exfoliation, antioxidants, sunscreen. You know, the product you use for daytime has to have a sunscreen. You don't need a sunscreen at night, obviously. So you can't get everything in one product. And then if you add problems like acne, rosacea, and then you're looking at different products to address different needs, clogged pores, breakouts, then to help those skin discolorations, one product can't do it all. Then you're looking at layering, especially when you have stubborn problems, higher concentrations of ingredients, these hero ingredients we've been talking about. So yeah, then you need to layer. People worry about how, you know, things absorbing and you got to do all this, you know, sheet masks and these, you know, micro needling and all these kind of things to help things absorb. It's ridiculous. It doesn't match the science. Ingredients absorb only two ways. They absorb based on their molecular weight, and they absorb based on the delivery system the ingredient is wrapped in. That's it. So you throw them on. I mean, you know, all my products are the same consistency. I just throw them on. That's it. I just get them on. The general rule of thumb is that you apply the thinnest product, textured product first to the thickest, because I don't have any thick products I put on my skin. I just get them all on and carry on. Except the only exception to that is during the day, the last product you apply is sunscreen. You don't put anything except foundation over sunscreen, although on my skin, my foundation also has sunscreen.
Mm. If we talk about ingredients, I have to ask you about a very, let's say, polarizing topic, which is, you are going to guess.
I don't know. I'm curious. So what are you going to say? What is it?
Well, synthetic versus natural.
Oh, gosh.
That's the topic.
Synthetic versus natural. It's so bizarre. Mm. I can't, you know how long that's been around? Almost since I started in the cosmetics industry. So here's the issue is not being afraid of what I would say is lab created ingredients. Synthetic doesn't make any, it's not like cotton versus polyester. It's lab created ingredients, but you know, even natural ingredients, so-called natural ingredients, are lab created, right? When you take a plant out of the ground and you got to get the bugs off and you got to get the dirt off and you got to process it to get it into a skincare product, right? It's not like you're buying this product with a plant extract. Like let's say it was spinach extract. It's not like it looks like lettuce. You know, it's not like it looks like spinach. You have to process the plant or the mineral to get it into the product. So I would say that every ingredient is lab created or lab engineered to one degree or another. However, in reality, there is natural ingredients are never going to do it all for skincare. They are never going to be as effective, as stable as lab engineered ingredients are going to be. The best products contain a blend of natural derived lab created ingredients and lab created ingredients. There are no natural retinols. There are no all natural niacinamides. There are no natural AHA, BHAs. There are no natural peptides. There are no natural ceramides. Well, there are natural ceramides, but then they would come from animals or humans and nobody's doing that. Oh, there are no natural sunscreens.
But people will say, Paul, about natural retinol, what about bakuchiol?
Bakuchiol, first of all, isn't retinol. Bakuchiol is a plant extract. It's a very good plant extract. It has a lot of antioxidant properties, has some interesting skin lightening properties, but it is not a cell communicating ingredient. There is one study, one really not well done study that made a claim after a handful of weeks that you got the same results as you do from retinol. Without going into too much technicality about why that's a bogus claim, there is no way that bakuchiol has the same properties as retinol in terms of 50 years of retinol proving that when it absorbs into skin, there is a receptor site for it on the skin cell to tell skin cells to make healthy, younger skin cells. There is no receptor site for bakuchiol. It isn't related to vitamin A. It's just a very, it's just a very good plant extract. It is. Mm-hmm. We use it. I like the way it works. In fact, I like its synergy with retinol, but I would never, it is just cosmetic rhetoric to suggest that it somehow replaces or substitutes for retinol. It just isn't true. It's bogus. It's cosmetic marketing crazy.
It's clear. Paula, what do you think when you hear the words clean beauty?
When I hear it, I think it's another way to market natural. It's kind of ambiguous. It doesn't really say all natural, but it kind of says all natural. I think you could define it any way you want. I don't think it's a bad term, but it's a marketing term. It doesn't help you it doesn't help you take better care of your skin. I don't know what it's trying to make you afraid of. You know, some companies have this list of what we don't use. And I'm thinking, really? That's what you don't use? That's like, why don't you just tell me that you're making bad skincare? Like, you're not going to take great care of my skin. And there are companies that literally won't make sunscreen because the formularies for sunscreen include ingredients that they won't use. So literally, why don't we just say, okay, go outside and let's get skin cancer. Yeah, that's what we'll do to take good care of your skin. I think it's another marketing angle that doesn't necessarily help a woman take great care of her skin. Mm-hmm. There's just more important information.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Herborian es una marca coreana fundada en 2007 y que hoy se ha convertido en un icono por sus fórmulas híbridas, productos que fusionan el tratamiento con centella asiática, ginseng, yuzu o bambú y el maquillaje. Con esta filosofía lanzaron en 2009 la primera BB Cream de Europa. Tras el éxito absoluto de esta primera BB Cream, dieron un paso más allá con la CC Cream de Herborian, de la que venden una unidad cada 30 segundos. Y te prometo que te deja la piel como si te hubieses puesto un filtro de Instagram. Es espectacular. La CC Cream de Herborian unifica y calma la piel gracias a la centella asiática. Además, proporciona una cobertura ligera que te deja la piel luminosa y con efecto buena cara de inmediato. Y sus pigmentos encapsulados se adaptarán al tono de tu piel para mejorarlo y unificarlo. Ahora Herborian lanza también el Super BB Cream Concealer, el primer corrector de ojeras híbrido, mitad maquillaje, mitad tratamiento, con un 5% de niacinamida y protección solar, ya disponible en Sephora.
What are the most misleading claims from beauty products?
All natural is a biggie. I think the exaggerated claims, you know, the new ingredient that does it all, the miracle ingredient, lately it's one product does it all. Those overblown claims, I mean, and it isn't that there aren't brilliant skincare products that do incredible things, but when it sounds too good to be true, it's too good to be true. That's why I always say, like, when I describe what retinol and niacinamide do as cell communicating ingredients, it's pretty remarkable what niacinamide and retinol do for skin. I mean, there's many remarkable ingredients, but they have a very specific thing that they do for skin. But that's why I always say, to an extent, I mean, I wish it did more. I mean, I wish it really was turning the clock back. But nobody's going from 60 to 40 without procedures. It's just not happening. By the way, let me just be real clear. And I take your compliment about how young I look and how good my skin looks at the age of 70. I think that's wonderful. And I take it in, and I helps my ego and my I think it's wonderful. But there's no way in hell that I look like this without procedures. Anybody. Any cosmetic person sitting down and talking to you and they say, oh, it's my products. Like, they're over 50 and they say, oh, I've never had a procedure, or I've never had surgery, I've never had Botox, I've never had fillers, are lying through their teeth. I know what people admire about how young I look is because of Paula's Choice skincare, because of the products I've been diligent about and what I've formulated over the years and what I've been dedicated and consistent with, mostly about sun protection, and what I've done with the procedures I've had. There's no way this neckline is because of Paula's Choice. It's just not, or any product line. And the hopes that skincare will replace what procedures can do, it's not humanly possible. And anybody who is telling you different is not telling the truth at all.
Okay, but I have to say that glow, it doesn't give you the Botox. It's not the Botox.
Well, that's about, that's not the Botox. That's skincare. But like I said, I know what people admire about my skin. That's Paula's Choice. And what is because of the procedures I've had. I get that, you know, I know where skincare starts and stops, and I know where procedures start and stop. And by the way, just to be clear, I'm not advocating people need to get procedures. I'm not selling or advocating, cosmetic dermatology or plastic surgery. That's everybody's decision. I just want people to make rational decisions about what skincare can and can't do. That's really been my goal since the late 70s, since I started.
Yeah. Manage the expectations, very important in life and very important in cosmetics.
Right. I tell people one of the myths, I'm sorry, Christina.
Go.
One of the things I've said for years and years and years, the other myth is people believe expensive means better. In the world of skincare, I can't tell you how many times I've seen where that is absolutely or rarely the case. And that for all the money you would waste hoping that that expensive skincare would do something special, the lesser expensive stuff you think won't do, take that money you're going to waste on the expensive stuff and put it in the bank. I mean, there's no interest rates right now, and the stock market's tanking, but assuming it'll cycle again, when you finally do decide to do something, it'll be there. It'll hopefully have grown, and you'll be able to afford whatever procedures really will make a difference that the expensive products aren't going to get you.
Totally agree. Paula, I don't know if you've watched No So Pretty, the four-part docuseries by HBO. It's about supposedly...
Not So Pretty?
No So Pretty, yeah. It's a docuseries by HBO, and it's supposedly about the dangerous beauty products.
No, I haven't seen it. Okay. If I saw it, it would probably upset me.
Probably, yeah. In your book, The Best Skin of Your Life, Stays Here, you say that you have had a love and hate relationship with the cosmetics industry from the very beginning. So you are very vocal and very critical and very, which is good, and very opinionated. What do you think it should be changed? I guess there's always room for improvement in terms of legislation and laws and security and so on.
Well, first of all, bureaucrats making laws about the beauty industry. I've seen some of the stuff the EU does and the US does, and you know they didn't ask me what I thought. And
that's a shame.
You know, I've researched the industry for 42 years. But just to back up the. I wanted to say when you mentioned Not So Pretty on HBO. So I actually don't go on social media or Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. I don't look at beauty skincare websites or social media just in general because I get so upset. I let my team tell me when I need to know something, but I think by now, if I did look at social media, I would have a stroke. I get so upset. I get so when I see the myths and the things they assert, and then reporters say to me, so should I believe what I hear on TikTok? I mean, really, I actually get asked that question and I'm thinking, what? First of all, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people saying they're experts on TikTok. I don't know all of them. I don't know where they're getting their information from, and they're giving it to you in 30-second sound. I don't know what are you asking me? I have no clue how to evaluate tens of thousands of people giving you information. That's number one. And number two is when my team does tell me some of the stuff, and mostly they tell me about the myths that are running around, I just want to kill. I feel like, you know, my 42-year career has gone down the toilet. Nobody's listening to me. And then I just want to, you know, go get a cocktail and go home. You know, it's so funny you say not so pretty, because they didn't call me and ask me my opinion.
They didn't call any toxicologist for the fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. They probably, never mind who I think they called. But nevertheless, no. So you asked me, I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Christina.
No, what I was saying that there's always room for improvement. So do you think that the industry, the laws, and so we make sure that we are doing the best products that we can?
There's no way that can be regulated. You can't, I can no sooner make the food industry to stop making chocolate cake and to stop making potato chips and to stop using hydrogenated fats and to, stop making foods loaded in sugars and selling you sugars. And they tell you, well, it's this special honey from someplace in this part of the world, so it must be good for you. And the body sees sugar as sugar, and it's not good. I can't do anything about the dietary facts, because, you know, one of the things that ages skin and ages the body is inflammation, whether it's dietary or from, you know, the inside out or the outside in. And an anti-inflammatory diet has been shown a million times over to be anti-aging for the body, for the skin. You can't stop people from eating chocolate cake. And, you know, I wish chocolate cake was a health food. Believe me, I wish a martini was a health food. You know, I just had a discussion. I'm in Europe right now. And I just had a discussion about wine. And I would love for wine to be a health food. And I know they've sold the notion that wine is a health food. The bottom line is, and believe me, I don't like this any more than anybody else does, but alcohol kills brain cells. I can't do anything about that. I didn't make that happen. It's not my fault. But one of the parts of your body that doesn't regenerate, aside from your heart muscle, is your brain cells. Brain cells don't regenerate. After a certain age, the brain cells you have are the brain cells you have, to an extent. I mean, I'm not going to go down pathways. It's more complicated than that. But in essence, the brain cells you have are the brain cells you have. And when you kill brain cells, you don't get them back. And alcohol kills brain cells. I don't care if it's in wine. I don't care if it's in scotch. Actually, I do care if it's in scotch, but it is in scotch. I do love my scotch. But it's not good for the brain. I can't do anything about that. It's not a health food. It's inflammatory. It's inflammatory for the body. It's inflammatory for the brain. So how do you regulate that? Do you stop the scotch industry? Do you stop the vodka industry? You can't regulate it for food. You can't regulate it for cosmetics.
Yeah, but in Europe, cosmetics are even more regulated than food.
Yeah, but it doesn't really change much. It doesn't mean you're getting better products. I promise you, it doesn't mean you're getting better products. I see what's out there. You're not getting, I mean, a lot of companies, because of this all natural thing, aren't selling sunscreens. That's bad skincare. They want to make you more afraid of sunscreen than the sun. Mm-hmm. The sun is the most deadly. It's the biggest source of cancer on the planet. It's ubiquitous. It's all over. And you should be more afraid of sunscreen than the sun. The irony of that is the recent research about something called epigenetics, and I'm not going to go down the explanation road and the science of epigenetics, but it turns out over the past, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, 5 years really solid research that, you know, the belief was, and the research was that the sun damages skin. Turns out the sun doesn't just damage skin. It turns out that, because we thought the sun's rays just stopped where the skin, you know, skin cells, that's where the sun damage stops. Turns out that's not. Turns out it's a cascade event, and sun damage affects and triggers cancers and disease and damage in the rest of the body. I was shocked. I mean, there has been research over the years that has shocked me, but I gotta say, even though once I read the studies and the science, it made sense, but it was so ingrained in me that sun exposure was about premature aging of the sun and about skin cancers, the notion that it would also affect the rest of your insides. I remember going, wait, I got it. Let me get a drink. sorry. Let me get a scotch. I got to sit back and think about this one. It was overwhelming. And it took about, even though I got it, I really grasped the science pretty fast, but I really had to delve deeper to make sure that it was solid, straight across science. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking at that research now for several years under this header called epigenetics, and it's pretty shocking. I still find it like, really? Wow. Yeah. But they want to make us afraid of sunscreen. Yeah. It's really, really stunning.
Paula, you were saying before that you don't get in social media, Instagram, TikTok, because you go YouTube or whatever, because you just get very upset. But we do have a big problem with misinformation in the beauty and cosmetics. And it's a problem that I think that we have to tackle. So how can we help consumers to see the difference between facts and fiction?
Right. Like the thing with sunscreen, I know that in some countries they made certain sunscreen ingredients illegal because they supposedly damaged the coral reef. That study was done in a petri dish. It was done in a lab, and they took the ingredient, 100% of the ingredient. They took some coral, they put it on the coral, and sure enough, the coral didn't do well. And they said, thereby, sunscreen in the water is killing the coral reef. That's not what's killing the coral reef. That has not been substantiated that that's true. But the bigger issue is that would be true, if it was true, it would be true of all sunscreen ingredients, because sunscreen blocks the sun, and coral is a living plant in the water. It's a living animal in the water, actually, really more an animal, but it thrives in the light. It gets its health from the light. So you block the light and it doesn't do well. It dies. But it's pollution that's hurting our coral reefs. I wish people wore enough sunscreen to damage. No, I mean, I don't want to damage the coral reef, God forbid, but nobody's wearing enough sunscreen to hurt our coral reefs. It's not what's happening. And it wouldn't be just that one ingredient. It would be any ingredient, any sunscreen ingredient that blocked the rays, because that's what they do. They block the sun's light. And that would be a problem. But there isn't enough sunscreen in the water to be getting in the way of any coral reef, because nobody's applying enough sunscreen. It's so crazy. And then the other thing is that I mean, I am, the way I do sunscreen is I don't like having to slather sunscreen. I mean, I do on my face and my hands and the parts of my body that are exposed to the sun, but I'm a kayaker. I have a home in Hawaii. I am outside a lot, but I wear sun protective clothing. I wear sun when I'm in the water and I'm kayaking or swimming or whatever I'm doing in the water, snorkeling. I have sun protective leggings on and I have what they call a rash guard. I have sun protect, my arms are covered and I have something that's up around my neck so that I'm only putting sunscreen on my face. And well, even actually the new sun guard, the new sun tops, the new SPF 50 sun tops I have actually have a thumb hole so you can cover the back of your hands, which is actually very cool. So I always say I'm more dressed in the water than I am than I am on land. And then you're putting almost no sunscreen in the water. But we would rather destroy our skin, if you want to believe the myth about sunscreen ingredients in the coral reef, you still don't have to give yourself skin problems and premature aging and skin cancer and systemic cancer by not protecting your skin. You just have to be sun smart. My company doesn't like it when I say you have two choices. You're either sun smart or you're sun stupid. They don't think I should tell people they're stupid. And I went, you know, I'm 70 years old. I can use the word stupid. You are either sun smart or you are sun stupid. You get to choose. That's up to you.
Paula, you've said that understanding what your skin needs for your skin type and skin concerns is vital. For me, this is almost like a tongue twister and I'm lost. So please help me.
Okay. So the issue is that so skin texture is how creamy or liquidy and everything in between a product's texture is. So if your skin type is dry, you need products that are creamier, lotiony, rich. If your skin is oily or combination, you need products that are thin and lightweight and very fluid and thin that won't clog pores. We all still need, whether we have oily skin or dry skin or combination skin or rosacea or acne, we still all need those vital ingredients I've been talking about, antioxidants, skin replenishing, hydrating ingredients, and skin repairing ingredients that we need to exfoliate. Especially oily skin needs to exfoliate, but sun-damaged skin, and we all have had sun-damaged skin because nobody's been good about sun protection from very young. So we need those basics and what texture products those ingredients come in vary by our skin type. So my antioxidant product, my skin repairing products, my hydrating product, my sunscreen. Well, actually, let me back up about my sunscreen for a second. But and my exfoliant are all liquids. Some to one degree or another, a gel, lightweight, liquidy product, very thin, fluid. My sunscreen, my foundation during regular day is my foundation. My foundation contains a pure mineral SPF 50. It's an IT cosmetic foundation, one of the few pure mineral SPF 50 foundations on the market. And for my oily skin, it's very happy without putting a lotion on or, you know, based sunscreen. But when I'm out for a long day kayaking or swimming, then I put a water-resistant, lotiony, because there just aren't any liquid ones that are very effective, in my opinion, that do what I need it to do to really protect my skin. I generally just prefer pure mineral sunscreens. That's not based on research. That's my own preference. The best is to be wearing a high SPF water-resistant sunscreen long days outside or in the water. So I do, underneath my foundation with SPF 50, wear a water-resistant lotiony kind of sunscreen underneath. So I'm really loaded up with sunscreen for a long time out in the out in the, you know, outside in the water or whatever I'm doing. So that would be the only time I make an exception for putting something. And then I, you know, if I've got to choose between maybe breaking out or sun damage, I'll choose not having
breaking
sun
out.
Damage any.
Yeah.
I can deal with the breakouts. Sun damage is very hard to undo.
Mm. You were saying before that inflammation is one of the worst enemies of the skin alongside
yes.
irritation. So if we talk about
Irritation, irritation causes inflammation.
Mm.
So they're related.
So if we talk about inflammation, we also have to talk about diet. And that's something that you point out before. So now the buzzword is microbiota. And people talk about lots of skin illness related to your microbiota, like eczema, psoriasis, and so on. Do you think there's a big link between your microbiota and your skin? What does the research show?
Are you talking about your microbiome on your face or your microbiome
no.
in your gut?
In your gut. Then I've got a second question, but first your gut.
there's nothing in the literature that would say that there is a connection. I think that a healthy biome, a healthy gut microbiome is important. I think the research is pretty clear about that. How it relates to skin disease or skin disorders is loose at best. But having a healthy gut is important. There's no question in terms of disease and health in general that that's important. How that translates to your skin, there's just no solid research I've seen that shows a strong link. It definitely doesn't hurt. Anything anti-inflammatory helps the entire body and helps the skin. I mean, that's just kind of straight up how it works. But in terms of a direct link, no, I haven't seen that in the published literature.
Microbiome skincare, because apparently it's one of the biggest trends. Do you think there's really science behind it?
No, there's no science behind it. It's silly. The thing with, so your microbiome on your skin, yours is not the same as mine. The person next to you, the people out there in the world, everybody has a different microbiome. That's number one. You have millions upon millions upon millions of microbes running around on your face that any skincare product can give you. I mean, and there's viruses on your skin, there's bacteria on your skin, there's mold on your, there's millions of microbes running around on your face. You can't stick that in a skincare product. You stick that in a skincare product. First of all, the preservatives are going to kill them. And because if they didn't, you would have a fungusy, you know, bacteria ridden, ugh. I mean, it would be, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's silly. That's number one. Number two is that because you really can't let's say you could put somebody's microbiome in a skincare product, which you can't. The issue is you would have to have, you know, billions of products, because how do you know what this person's microbiome needs and that person's microbiome needs? What makes sense in skincare is putting ingredients in that are called prebiotics, which are the ingredients that would help your skin make its own probiotics, or you would put in something called postbiotics, which are the after products, the byproducts of what a healthy biome makes for skin. Now, that's a smart balancing approach. Act for a micro to help your microbiome on your skin. But there's no any product making claims that it contains probiotics for your skin to help your microbiome. It's just silly science. It's not true.
Okay, let's do, just to close, just to do a quick yes or no and why, okay? So I'm just going to give you some...
I'm not the quickest person, but I'll do my best.
Okay, so first one, drinking collagen or hyaluronic acid is good for your skin. Yes or no and why?
It's better for your body. It's not so good for your skin. It's hard to get things that go from the body into your skin. Skin is damaged from making its own. It would have its own source, but sun damage prevents that from being made. So I don't think it's bad to drink hyaluronic acid. I don't know enough about the research about collagen. I know some, whether or not to recommend it. But in terms of going to the skin, not really.
Okay.
It won't hurt you, but you're not going to get rid of wrinkles from it.
Okay, your golden standard is use SPF rather than buying...
Sunscreen is the first one, and then the other ingredients we've been talking about. Good. Replenishing ingredients, antioxidants, and skin repairing ingredients. Those are the gold standards.
Okay. Paula, you shouldn't combine retinol with vitamin C.
What is that one about? The answer is you absolutely combine them. They live together in skin naturally. So what are you going to do? If they live together in skin, why can't they go on together in skin? That's like saying you can't eat a carrot and drink orange juice. You know, the skin is just the largest organ of the body. It doesn't make sense when vitamin A already lives in skin and vitamin C already lives in skin. Why can't they go together? I don't know where that comes from, but it doesn't hold up in terms of skin physiology. It's not true.
Okay. And drinking water improves and reduces dry skin.
Nobody has gotten rid of their dry skin from drinking water. You drink too much water, you go to the bathroom. That's it. Bottom line, you just go to the bathroom often. It's not bad to drink water, but in terms of dehydrated skin, nobody has had to give up their moisturizer because they carry a 2-liter bottle of water around with them. No science behind it. Doesn't work that way we think it does. Moisture in skin is a whole other thing than drinking water. Doesn't have anything to do with dry skin.
Okay. Fragrance, whether natural or synthetic, is a problem for skin.
It's all a problem for skin. The action of releasing fragrance, essential oils is what comes to mind. That's a marketing term that kind of came up in the 70s and 80s because it was becoming well known that fragrance caused irritation. The real name for those oils is they are volatile oils, but volatile oils doesn't sound very good for skin, but it was natural, nice to make a product not smell bad. So they became essential oils, even though the wafting fragrance, the way it does it is a volatile action and it's irritating for skin, always irritating for skin.
Paula, do I really need an eye cream?
You don't always need an eye cream. If your face product is moisturizing enough, well formulated, contains all the brilliant ingredients we've been talking about, is emollient enough for the right texture for your eye area, doesn't have to stop at your cheekbone. You can put it around your eye. Now, for my skin, because the skin around my eye is drier than on the rest of my face, the liquids and the light gels I use on the rest of my face aren't creamy enough for the dehydrated skin I have and the dry skin I have around my eyes. So I do use a separate product. Now, it's a moisturizer. It's not labeled an eye cream. So I just use a beautiful, loaded with all those ingredients we've been talking about around my eyes. It doesn't have to be labeled an eye cream. You want it labeled an eye cream. People always say, given you've said you don't need an eye cream, why did you make eye creams? And I said, because when we do surveys and we ask, what's the one product you don't buy from Paula's Choice? You know what, everybody, 90% of the respondents said eye cream. And I'm thinking, really? Really? How How can that be? You know, they don't believe me. You know, they need to see eye cream. I remember one very dear friend, and this is somebody I've known for years. She actually said she wrote eye cream on the moisturizer I gave her to use around her eyes. You know, she needed to see the word eye cream. So we made eye creams for all the women who didn't believe me. So they were, at least I knew they were using great ingredients around their eyes. I mean, that is straight up why we did it. 90%. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. That, yeah. So no, you don't. But if it needs to say eye cream, at least it should be beautifully formulated.
Okay. I'm going to ask you something that probably you've never heard this question. Never, ever in your life.
That would be
in your career.
In my 40s. That would be something. Let me hear it, Christina. Shoot.
Should I avoid parabens?
Are you kidding? I've heard that for years. I don't know what the hysteria around parabens is really sad for women and men, for that matter. Parabens in skincare as a preservative were the most gentle and naturally sourced. Parabens are natural in raspberries. Actually, they're natural in most fruits. They are, in the plant kingdom, a natural way that a lot of foods, particularly berries, fight off, you know, whatever infection or infection's not the right word, whatever critters come at them. In skin, when you apply parabens in a skincare product, they break down into a substance that is no longer parabens. They're not only safe on skin, they're not even parabens once they absorb in, and they're gentle. They're more gentle than any other preservative in that's available in skincare. The myth about it affecting being an endocrine disruptor and is doesn't whatever that is that it's found in the body, you're eating it. It's in foods. It's either added to foods or it is naturally found in foods. In skincare products, it doesn't. It's no longer parabens once it's absorbed. I don't get it. It was terrible, the paranoia around parabens, because it didn't. It made skincare worse because the alternative preservatives to parabens aren't as gentle as parabens were for skin. It's really sad. Really a sad.
Gentle and not as well researched.
Not as well. No, the stability wise, they're no. I would say the other alternatives. You're really not looking so much at research. You're really looking at how stable the product is. And so, what you might have read is some of these alternative ingredients aren't as stable. They're not as long lasting in a formula to keep the bacteria and the molds, and they fail a lot. They fail a lot. So that might be what you're hearing. It's not that there's not research. They're just not as stable. And really, the amount you have to use just makes them more irritating because you don't need to use so much of parabens.
And alongside the parabens, we've got the mineral oil, another one.
Do people still believe that?
Yeah.
Is that really
honestly
still around?
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of, so petrolatum and mineral oil from a safety profile are phenomenally safe. They are medical grade ingredients. They have a rating, a pharmacopoeia rating in Europe and the United States. They are, I mean, they're not elegant ingredients. I mean, they're not fancy. I mean, they're, you know, pretty plain, but in terms of having dry skin, they're brilliant, phenomenal ingredients. What people did is took research from looking at mineral oil and petrolatum before they were, how do you say it, cleaned up, before they were cosmetically and upgraded, pharmacologically made, cleaned up to be used in a prescription product or to be used in cosmetics. You can't take a straight, you know, take something that is derived from the gasoline you know, the oil industry and go, oh, look at this byproduct. It's crap. It has all this stuff. Well, yeah, it does, but that's not what we're using. It's getting cleaned up. It's just like what I said about when you take a plant out of the ground and when you got to clean it up, you know, you got to take the bugs off and you got to take the dirt off and you got to clean up the plant. Well, you take, you know, a byproduct of the, you know, the oil industry to get petrolatum that's pharmaceutical grade or mineral oil that's pharmaceutical grade to put it in a skincare product, you got to clean it up. You can't look at the research that's directly related when it first comes out of the ground and extracted from the oil industry. That research isn't connected. That's how the fear factor came up about mineral oil and petrolatum. Just distortion.
Fear mongering. And just the last one. Paula, do I need any special product for my neck and chest?
No.
Funny expression just, that I really like.
Well, because there's no research showing that the neck or the décolleté, whatever they call it, needs different ingredients than the face. I mean, there's just none. I mean, it doesn't exist. I don't get, when I look at the formularies, they're not even nicely formulated products, but there's no research. Same thing with daytime products versus nighttime products. The skin doesn't need anything different at night than daytime, except a sunscreen. You need a sunscreen during the day. You know, you've heard this thing about skin heals better at night than it does during the day. Have you heard that one?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not true.
That's another one.
Skin heals better during the day because at night you're laying flat, your circulation isn't moving around, you're breathing shallow, you're not getting deep oxygen through the body, and you're doing better during the day because you're moving, your circulation is going, you're breathing more deeply. When you're in the hospital and you're recovering from something, an operation, getting over a disease, the first thing they want you to do is get up and move because you heal faster when you're moving, not when you're laying around. Sorry, I get so carried away. This is why I can't look at social media. I'd have a stroke. I'd be in the hospital. I'd have a stroke. Yeah, no, myths, just crazy stuff, crazy stuff.
Okay, that was it. It has been so brilliant. Thank you, Paula, honestly, for taking
You're
the time.
A doll.
We've been talking for like an
You're
hour and 20 minutes.
It's
been brilliant.
I need a drink.
Half a
scotch. Don't tell anybody. You're a doll,
thank
sweetheart.
You
by
so
the way,
much.
Is that what building is that behind you, by the way? Because you're in Dubai,
I live in
right?
Dubai, yeah. That's the Burj Khalifa.
Oh, it is the Burj. I thought it was. Yeah. It's a little hard to tell, but I thought that's what you were looking. I've been to Dubai. I thought that's what you were looking out to. Beautiful view.
Yeah,
beautiful
that's
view.
Burj Khalifa. You're in Holland. I'm in Dubai. There we are.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you so much for taking the time. It's been such a privilege.
Thank you,
Paula.
Really,
it's take care.
Been wonderful. All right, ciao. Take care.
Don't forget that all the notes for this chapter are in my blog, thebeautymail.es. Also, if you don't want to miss an interview, subscribe to the Cristina Mitre podcast on your regular podcast player. And one last favor, if you listen to me on Apple Podcasts, give me a few stars and leave a review. That way, you will help this podcast to continue growing. Thank you very much. You will be hearing from me again next Sunday. Hoy te voy a recomendar un aceite en seco, pero no uno cualquiera, sino un producto icónico de Melvita, marca pionera en cosmética ecológica, que solo utiliza ingredientes naturales procedentes de cultivos ecológicos controlados y certificados, y con un claro compromiso social y medioambiental desde hace 40 años. Su aceite extraordinario L'Or Bio es un aceite ultrasensorial y que se absorbe de maravilla, dejando la piel suave e hidratada. Se elabora con
5 aceites orgánicos procedentes de comercio justo. Aceite de argán de Marruecos, aceite de kendi de Indonesia, Inca Inchi de Perú, aceite de dátil de Burkina y aceite de baobab de Kenia. El aceite extraordinario Log Bio de Melvita huele de maravilla, con una combinación de notas florales, cítricas y afrutadas, y puedes usarlo tanto en el rostro como en el cuerpo y el cabello. Tanto este como el resto de productos de esta maravillosa marca los podéis encontrar en las tiendas y web de Clarel. Gracias a Melvita por su cosmética respetuosa con el planeta y por apostar por los buenos contenidos en este podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.